Indonesia has long been known as a model of moderate Islam, but some have questioned exactly how liberal and tolerant the country is today. Last year, more than 200 cases of abuse of religious rights were recorded and some made international headlines. For example, in August, an ethnic Chinese Buddhist woman was found guilty of insulting Islam and jailed after she complained about a mosque loudspeaker. In a separate incident, two gay men were publicly caned in Aceh in April. These cases and Indonesia's treatment of minority groups in general will be the focus of the annual Indonesia update at the Australian National University from tomorrow. Among those speaking at the event is Sydney Jones, Director of the Institute for Policy Analysis of Conflict in Jakarta. Sydney Jones, welcome to RN Drive.
Thank you very much.
You've lived in Indonesia for many years. Are things really getting worse for minority groups?
I think you can see a perceptible increase in intolerance and in the influence of politicians with an Islamist agenda who actually want to ensure that their norms and values predominate.
I mentioned the woman jailed for complaining about the noise from a mosque and the gay men caned in Aceh. Are these just isolated cases or has something shifted in Indonesia? Has there been an increase of these sorts of cases?
I think there's definitely been an increase, and I think we now have survey data to strengthen that belief. One of the papers that will be presented at this conference takes survey data over time and looks at increasing intolerance and more people expressing hardline views, especially on issues, for example, such as that only a Muslim can be president or elected as a local official. They're more now than half of Indonesia's Muslim population believes that to be the case, rather than all citizens, regardless of religion, should have an equal chance at public office.
Last year, the minority Christian Chinese governor known as Ahok was jailed for violating the blasphemy laws, and he won't be released until January. He was the most high-profile person found guilty of insulting Islam, and he was very popular, actually. You know, he rose in a pretty extraordinary way, close to the president as well. How else can those blasphemy laws be used?
Well, there's a real serious problem with the extent to which blasphemy laws are being used to punish what in most other countries would be seen as free speech or criticism. So the woman who criticized the volume of the loudspeakers at the mosque across the street from her house was jailed on blasphemy charges. Anyone who suggests that that politicians are referring to Quranic sources as a way of getting votes can be, that's what brought Ahok, the governor, down. But there are more than a dozen cases, I think, that are current in Indonesia with blasphemy as the accusation.
A lot of the mistreatment of minorities is blamed on the so-called Muslim majority. But are they really the majority? What do most Indonesian Muslims actually think?
I think it's difficult to say what Indonesian Muslims as a whole think because it's a very diverse group. What I think the data shows now is that people expressing more intolerant views have become more influential in the political elite and in the body politic. And so it's not just a question of the majority of Muslims suggesting, for example, that no alcohol be sold, but it's that a faction of Muslims that want to see a very conservative agenda be promoted are having more sway over politics more generally. So we saw not just the Jakarta elections, but also in a recent spate of local elections, this notion that only a Muslim can be elected as governor resonating in North Sumatra as well as in West Kalimantan and wherever you had Muslim candidates pitted against non-Muslims.
Is there any attempt to resist this? I mean, you know, what sort of
resistance? Yes, I think one of the interesting things is that there is a backlash and that there are citizens in various forms who are trying to say these views don't represent us. These attempts to have the state enforce a very conservative moral and political agenda is not the Indonesia that we believe in. It's not our self-image of a plural, open, tolerant Indonesia. So, for example, around the country, these citizens groups to monitor the internet and respond to fake news is growing apace. And some of that fake news is untrue statements about assaults on Islam or untrue statements about the backgrounds of particular candidates. During the 2014 elections, for example, Jokowi, the current president, was accused of being a closet Christian and descended from Chinese. That's the kind of statement that these groups are trying to counter. And I think social media does have a lot to do with why these views have taken hold.
Next April, Indonesians will vote on a new president, and the incumbent Joko Widodo recently announced that the hardline Muslim cleric Ma'ruf Amin would be his running mate. What do we read into that decision?
I think we can read a lot into that decision, but it should be noted that until about an hour before the announcement, Jokowi didn't want this man as his vice president. He wanted another man who was much more open and far less representative of hardline views. But basically, the heads of political parties making up the coalition that supports him rebelled because they didn't like the candidate that Jokowi had chosen. And essentially, they are the ones who decided on Ma'ruf Amin, partly because he's too old to run as a president when the next elections come around in 2024. And they don't want to have anyone in the vice presidential slot who can challenge them. So it's much more than just an issue of pandering to hardline Muslims, which is the way it's been portrayed in much of the media.
In July, Widodo insisted that Indonesia's standing as a model of moderate Islam is still intact. Is there any chance of preserving that reputation? Because not only do you say that there's been an increase and a change there, but actually the international reputation is also shifting as a result.
Yes, I think it has shifted. I think the mobilization around the Jakarta governor hurt Indonesia's image significantly, but I also think it had a detrimental effect inside Indonesia, and there's a legacy from that that we're seeing play out. The rise in intolerance is a direct result of the mobilization that took place. Some of that was beginning to happen anyway, but there's the survey data I mentioned shows a sharp spike after the governor was brought down. I don't know whether it's possible for Indonesia to go back to what it had before. I think to some extent, the idea of a completely open, tolerant Indonesia was a little bit of a national myth anyway, but there's no question that views have hardened and hard to see it rolling back.
Sydney Jones, thank you so much for sharing your insights.
Thank you.
That's the director of the Institute for Policy Analysis of Conflict in Jakarta, Sydney Jones. And Sydney will be speaking at ANU's annual Indonesia Update event, which takes place tomorrow and on Saturday. This is RN Drive.